to you. It's the Money Man Report with Dan Frischberg. Hear his unique delivery of the inside story from the front lines of Wall Street. At a high-profile list of guests, plus your phone calls. Dan Frischberg orchestrates the sound of your money growing on the Money Man Report, weekdays at 4, exclusively on the Biz Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bar Talks, Sunday, the 9th of December. Scott Boats here with my guest, Mickey Doss. Mickey, a lot of people may not understand the reality that when you sue a doctor for damages or sue a hospital for damages, it's not the doctor who's going to reach into his pocket necessarily and come up with, for example, $250,000 or whatever the amount is that's required to compensate a paraplegic. It's not the doctor. That's what insurance exists for.
Scott, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is no different than when you and I get behind our automobiles, and unfortunately on any given day we are careless or make a mistake. We are not expected to come out of our jeans and our pockets to make that individual that we have injured whole. That is why we all have insurance, and that's why the state of Texas as drivers requires us to have insurance. I'll give you a funny story. I had a OB-GYN case years back, and I hired a very local prominent OB-GYN doctor here in town. And his comment during deposition was, you know, like a truck driver, he goes, while I don't drive an 18-wheeler, I perform deliveries and I perform surgeries, and it is just the harsh realities on any given day. I may not have my best day. And his comment was, you know, in 42 years, he had been sued twice. And he said, on those two occasions, the one case that I felt like I did something wrong, I just was not going to play the insurance company's game. And I told them, I'm not going to give a deposition. You're not going to like it if I give a deposition. And he said, I want this case resolved. And they were forced to resolve the case as opposed to going through the hoopla and the defense and all those kind of things. Now, similarly, he also said he felt like in the 40-something years that he had been sued wrongly in the other case, and he was more than happy to defend it vigorously, tried that case, and won that case. And just like you say, it is not personal money that's being expended by doctors to resolve cases. It is part of the insurance system, and that's why they pay a premium.
And you know that, you know from talking to me, I have a great deal of skepticism about insurance due to some personal realities I have in my life. But I distrust a great deal about insurance. But I also know that insurance is actually driving this. The doctors and the lawyers aren't nearly as at each other's throats as some might think. This is actually a corporate move, this so-called tort reform, that has a lot more to do with profits with insurance, because insurance is what pays these awards, than it does with greedy trial lawyers or so-called jackpot justice. It has much more to do with insurance than anything else.
Scott, in defense of doctors, I mean, I will say, it is the harsh reality is that the insurance companies are dictating not only the practice of medicine, but also the practice of law. The reimbursements, if you talk to the doctors that are out there struggling and trying to make a living, they will tell you that once upon a time where they were compensated for an adequate procedure, that those reimbursements have been cut now by 30 or 40%. And if, in fact, your reimbursements are being cut by those numbers and they are controlling how many patients a day you see, and where once upon a time a physician felt like he could see 10 or 12 patients a day and make a living and put his kids through school, and he is now being forced to see 30 or 40 patients a day with the same support staff, I mean, the harsh realities of it are you're apt to make more mistakes. And, you know, where it's all headed, I don't know, but it is not good for guys like you and me or the consumer.
And that's being pushed by insurance realities. And anyone interested in this issue of how insurance reform and so-called medical malpractice reform interplay, go to consumerwatchdog.org, consumerwatchdog.org, and look at their article, How Insurance Reform Lowered Doctors' Medical Malpractice Rates in California and How Malpractice Caps Failed. We got malpractice caps in Texas in 2003. California had been through that. And look at how insurance reform actually is at the root of what needs to happen if you're concerned about access and quality of care for everyone. But Mickey, several years ago, you and I were involved in a case, and let's talk about how that case might be handled, those facts might be handled under today's law.
Scott, that was a tragic case that we had for a young lady who had gone into the hospital to deliver a child, and unfortunately the anesthesiologist forgot to turn on the pulse oximeter.
And that's his job. He exists to turn on the pulse oximeter.
And the irony of the thing in that case, I don't know if you remember or not, Scott, is that the defense lawyers actually found themselves a doctor out of Ohio who was a board-certified doctor to come in and say that pulse oximetry was not the standard of care, even though the anesthesia guidelines clearly said that was what, quote, the standard required back when we did that case. And there was no pulse oximetry used in that case, and that is what measures the level of oxygenation in the blood.
And Mickey, these are complicated chess games. I'm glad you bring that up, but that was their expert. And in these complicated chess games, it's not about greed. It's not about a quick payday. That's not what medical malpractice is about, or the law involving it. It's certainly not about jackpot justice.
Scott, it takes anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 to actually and adequately work up a case today, between deposition cost, between expert cost, between medical research, and just to get to the jury, it is not uncommon for our firm to spend $75,000 in developing a case, understanding the medicine, being educated, and taking the necessary depositions.
And so take that off the $250,000 in that particular case. Do the math yourself for the payment of the lawyers and add to it, Mickey. Is the $250,000 cap tied to any sort of inflation gauge?
See, and that's the other problem with the $250,000 cap. Unlike the wrongful death cap that they had years back, which is tied into the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which now, because of the CPI adjustment, is floating around $1.4 million, the $250,000 cap is not tied into the CPI. So as time goes on, the $250,000 non-economic award will be diminished and eroded away, because the cost and the value of that as time passes will be much less.
And I tell you, for somebody who looks at this stuff somewhat cynically, it just looks like an effort to extinguish these sorts of claims. Not because doctors aren't concerned about quality of care. They are. They're very much concerned. But it's at the root. It's at the money. Who benefits? And that's why I have such profound skepticism toward the involvement of the insurance industry in these reforms.
Scott, let me give you another example. In this last legislation that was passed, some of the very politically powerful folks were able to get protections for doctors that were affiliated with governmental institutions, University of Texas, UTMB Galveston, UT Houston. And quite frankly, because of the limitations that are now applied to those doctors, which are $100,000, there has not been a case come across my desk that warrants me taking that on. And I can tell you, in talking to the defense lawyers that actually do those cases, where once upon a time they had anywhere between 50 or 75 active claims going on, I don't think that there has been one or even two cases filed against a physician practicing down at UTMB these days.
All right, the extinction of these types of cases. But Mickey, with our lady, a young girl who went in to deliver, and she had two small children as it was, the anesthesiologist wasn't doing anything with regard, apparently, to the pulse oximeter.
What made that case even more complicated was that she delivered a healthy child.
Yeah.
And then she became, as you know, because of the lack of oxygenation to her brain, comatose and hypoxic. And she was in a permanent vegetative state, which was very expensive for her. Her family, though, however, was a strong believer in God, and they were not prepared to, nor were they willing to, give up any thought that maybe she would come out of it one day. So as a result of that, they kept her on a respirator for a while, and quite frankly, they were very relieved when she was able to breathe on her own.
Yeah.
Even though that she was still in a vegetative state, and the cost to take care of that lady was extremely, extremely expensive, but also to rear her two kids was not without the economic thing. But today, Scott, while we were able to do good for that family, at least I felt like we were, and able to take care of those two boys and take care of their economic future, we would not be able to do that today.
Because of these rules, and that family was not driven by jackpot justice. There was a horrible, I guess accident is appropriate word, involving a doctor who is responsible for care. It's one thing, Mickey, if I make a mistake on a will or something like that. People don't end up as paraplegics. people don't end up brain dead. But on these cases, to put this sort of cap on such cases and call it a defense against jackpot justice, that is a horrible offense to anyone out there who believes that we're a nation of laws, not of men, not of special interest groups. The idea that this should exist because of a fear of jackpot justice with these sorts of injuries, given a cap that is not tied into the CPI, that is offensive. That ought to be offensive to everyone out there, but that's exactly what has happened.
Scott, we're hopeful as both advocates of patients and advocates of the trial lawyer system that there will be a change and people will finally cry out and say, you know, look, this is ridiculous. This is not what we bought. This is not the bill of goods that we were sold, and people will go back and actually change back to where the system was, where juries, 12 people get to determine it, subject to whatever a court of appeals believes to be fair. What else is kind of tragic and somewhat problematic, Scott, is that in addition to the same proponents of tort reform and Proposition 12, these same folks are also trying to set forth an agenda that would take away the jury system in its entirety.
We've outgrown the jury system, I guess they believe.
I guess, and you know, I guess what happens to me if you've got the, you know, what is it, the fox watching the hen house, you've got some problems going on, and the same guys that are putting these judges and putting judicial campaigns together are the ones that are going to determine what's fair and what's just. I've got a problem with that.
You know, the trial lawyers were outspent 4-5-1 in the 2003 situation that happened here in Texas. And the money is on the side of the people who want to limit the access of individuals to the system. That's what the civil justice system is about, to redress harm. And the money is betting against individuals having the right to do that. It seems to me that that's what civil justice is about, is having the right to seek redress for harms, but the big money is to stop that, to limit lawsuits which challenge the arrogance of corporations and the like. And that seems terribly wrong to me. But Mickey, we'll be back here in a minute. You have another thought?
I want to talk a little bit when we come back, Scott, about those that no longer have, quote, access to the courthouse. And I'll tell you certain stories that we've gotten in the nursing home arena and other cases like that where we would prosecute those cases once upon a time. But however, because of the 250 cap and because of the limitations that we now have in terms of what needs to be done in terms of just the economics of prosecuting a case where I have to tell family members, ma'am, I concur with you that that doctor deviated from the standard of care, but unfortunately, I just can't help you. Those are the tough calls, Scott. Those are very difficult for me to make and other folks like me to make.
All right, you're listening to Bar Talk. This is Scott Boats with special guest Mickey Doss. Whatever happened to suing bad doctors in Texas? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Biz Radio Network.
Have you been targeted or arrested by federal or state law enforcement?